Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
Nigeria's president promises Malala to rescue the kidnapped girls, and Kerry extends his stay to continue Iran talks. I'm Frances Alonso reporting from Washington. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan has promised Malala Yousafzai that his government will rescue the more than 200 schoolgirls kidnapped by Boko Haram. The promise came at a special meeting in Abuja today, exactly 3 months after the girls were taken. Heather Murdoch reports.
3 months ago, in the Nigerian town of Chibok, nearly 300 schoolgirls climbed into trucks manned by men in fatigues. When the men started burning down the schoolhouse, the girls knew they were not, as they had said, soldiers rescuing them from a coming attack. More than 50 girls escaped that night, but more than 200 remain missing.
What are we demanding?
We want our girls now and alive!
What are we demanding?
We want our girls now!
In Abuja, activists in the Bring Back Our Girls campaign still rally each day to demand their rescue. Boko Haram, the insurgent group that has killed thousands of people this year alone, claims to be holding the girls and has threatened to sell them as slaves. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Abuja.
Worldwide pressure is mounting for a ceasefire in the week-long clash between Israel and Hamas militants in the Gaza Strip, but the warring parties continue their attacks across the skies today. The European Union said it's talking with parties in the region in an attempt to broker a halt to the combat. It called on Israel and Hamas to exercise maximum restraint. The Arab League called on the international community to help end the Israeli airstrikes, saying the bombardment of Gaza cannot be met with silence anymore. Ukrainian forces are searching for crew members of a downed military cargo plane today along the Russian border as troops and separatists fight for control of key areas in eastern Ukraine. The Russian news agency Interfax reports that rebels are questioning four crew members of the plane in Krasnodar, which is about 30 miles west of the Russian border. Meanwhile, Moscow has not made any comment. One of the biggest banks in the United States, Citigroup, is paying a $7 billion penalty to resolve U.S. government charges that it sold risky housing securities that helped trigger the country's deep recession in 2008. Under the agreement today, Citigroup will pay $4 billion to the government's Justice Department, $500 million to a U.S. insurance fund and several states' governments, and provide $2.5 billion in relief to financially troubled homeowners. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry held more inconclusive meetings with his Iranian counterpart in Vienna today as the effort continued to break the deadlock in talks on the future of Iran's nuclear program. VOA's Al Pessin reports.
Secretary Kerry flew into Vienna overnight from Afghanistan to join the discussions and meet with Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif. Kerry arrived shortly after a senior U.S. official involved in the talks told reporters some of Iran's positions are inadequate and unworkable. Officials say an agreement on long-term limits on Iran's nuclear program and an end to international economic sanctions is 70% finished, but that significant gaps remain on key issues. Those are believed to include how much capacity Iran will retain to enrich uranium, a potential fuel for nuclear bombs, and how long the restrictions will last. Al Pessin, VOA News, Vienna.
The shipwrecked Costa Concordia cruise ship has been successfully refloated in Italy. Salvage workers began the work today of raising the rusty liner from its watery grave off the Tuscan island of Giglio, where it sank in a nighttime disaster 2.5 years ago, leaving 32 people dead. The full refloating will take about a week before it's towed to Genoa for dismantling. The ship rolled onto its side when it sank. Troublemakers marred a gathering in downtown Buenos Aires in support of Argentina's performance in a 1-0 loss to Germany in the World Cup finals. Clashes erupted between youths and police late Sunday near the city's Oblast Monument, hours after what started as a peaceful rally. Police arrested more than 50 people. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Cameroon's military says Nigerian Boko Haram militants attacked a military post, sparking a gun battle with soldiers. Local residents note that each time Boko Haram battles Cameroon's military, the bodies of dead militants are buried quickly so they cannot be identified.
That's Moki Edwin Kinzeka reporting from North Cameroon. Details coming up also in the news. The leader of Boko Haram has claimed responsibility for a recent bombing in Lagos, which, if confirmed, would be the militant group's first attack in Nigeria's capital. We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Zimbabwe, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, the leader of Boko Haram has claimed responsibility for a recent bombing in Lagos, which, if confirmed, would be the militant group's first attack in the Nigerian commercial capital. In a video released today, Abubakar Shekau says he sent the bomber who set off two explosions at a Lagos fuel depot on June 25th, killing at least two people. The government said the explosions were caused by a gas canister. Shekau laughs at that idea, saying, "If you hide the truth from the people, you cannot hide it from Allah." The Boko Haram leader also claims responsibility for a recent bombing in Abuja that killed 24 people. The undated video shows Shekau speaking in Hausa, flanked by 12 masked gunmen. There was no immediate comment from Nigerian police or the government. A Boko Haram attack in Lagos would be a cause for concern. The city is Nigeria's largest, with some 20 million people. Most of Boko Haram's attacks have taken place around its original base in the northeast. The group is blamed for thousands of deaths in the past 5 years. Cameroon's military says Nigerian Boko Haram militants attacked a military post, sparking a gun battle with soldiers. Local residents note that each time Boko Haram battles Cameroon's military, the bodies of dead militants are buried quickly so they cannot be identified. Reporter Moki Edwin Kinzeka has more on the story from Bondere in North Cameroon.
Cameroon's government spokesperson tells VOA that heavily armed Boko Haram members attacked the border village of Bondere in the early hours of Friday and made off with a military vehicle and weapons.
A group of armed men from the terrorist organization Boko Haram attacked the Boshi locality in the far north region. Our defense forces responded and the attackers went on the run and disappeared within the Nigeria territory.
Isa Chiruma said the military killed three of the assailants and one Cameroonian soldier was wounded, but the media reports that nine assailants and two Cameroonians were killed. Bondere resident Dogo Ibrahim says the attackers left with the corpses and the wounded.
Alors, il y a eu pendant 30 minutes des coups de feu. On ne sait pas exactement qui a tiré, mais il y avait au moins du sang.
He says there was indiscriminate shooting in their village for at least 30 minutes, and there were many corpses and blood everywhere, but they have not been able to trace the corpses since the attackers left. Cameroon has tightened security along its borders in an effort to stop encroachments by Boko Haram, which has attacked several villages and used Cameroonian territory as a base and a refuge. Cameroon's military has noted that each time soldiers kill Boko Haram militants, the militants carry the corpses back to Nigeria. The militants appear to be hiding the identities of those who were killed. François Bingono Bingono, a local sociologist, explains.
On n'utilise pas de cercueil. On enroule le cadavre dans un linceul et on ne creuse pas profondément.
They do not use coffins, do not dig deep graves, and do not place signs to indicate where corpses are buried, he says. Since it is in an area that looks like a desert and is windy, one cannot detect where corpses are buried 12 hours after the burial. Businessman Mustafa Jallo, who lives in Bondere, told VOA that at times the assailants are Cameroonians who have joined Boko Haram.
There are people who live among the borders who can be Cameroonians or Nigerians, but having the same tribe. Some which are Cameroonians joined the Boko Haram and fight against Cameroonians. When they are killed, their tribe now bury them so early so that the forces should not identify that those killed were Cameroonians, to just keep the blame to Nigerians.
The attack on Bondere was the second by suspected Boko Haram assailants this month. Last week, a military post in Zina was seized for one night and the assailants stole weapons, which they took back to Nigeria. The spokesperson for Cameroon's military, Colonel Bajek, told VOA that despite the setback, the military is determined to crush Boko Haram. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Bondere, Cameroon.
Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan has promised Malala Yousafzai, a Pakistani girl shot by the Taliban on her way to school, that his government will rescue the more than 200 schoolgirls kidnapped by Boko Haram. The promise came at a special meeting in Abuja today, exactly 3 months after the girls were taken. As Heather Murdoch reports, Boko Haram has also released a new video mocking activists calling for the return of the girls.
3 months ago, in the Nigerian town of Chibok, nearly 300 schoolgirls climbed into trucks manned by men in fatigues. When the men started burning down the schoolhouse, the girls knew they were not, as they had said, soldiers rescuing them from a coming attack. More than 50 girls escaped that night, but more than 200 remain missing.
What are we demanding?
We back our girls now and alive!
What are we demanding?
We back our girls now!
In Abuja, activists in the Bring Back Our Girls campaign still rally each day to demand their rescue. Boko Haram, the insurgent group that has killed thousands of people this year alone, claims to be holding the girls and has threatened to sell them as slaves. After her meeting with President Jonathan Monday, Malala said the president promised the girls will be rescued.
The president fortunately promised me that he will do something for these girls, and he promised me that the girls will be returned as soon as possible.
Visiting Nigeria on her 17th birthday, Malala is an activist for girls' education. 2 years ago, the Taliban shot her in the head for her work in Pakistan, drawing international outrage and making her famous worldwide. Malala says she spoke to some of the schoolgirls that escaped, adding that although they are free, they are still suffering.
I spoke to him about those girls whom I met yesterday and who were telling me that they cannot go to school. They have dreams. They want to become doctors, engineers, and teachers. But the government is not providing them any facility. They also need health facilities. They also need security, but the government is not doing anything.
Sitting next to Malala, presidential spokesperson Ruben Abati defended the government's record on education.
This administration has spent more on education than any other administration before now. And education is one of President Jonathan's main priority areas.
But Malala says more than 10 million children have no access to education in Nigeria and calls on the international community as well as the Nigerian government to address the problem. However, much of northeastern Nigeria has been under emergency rule for more than a year, and authorities say they simply don't have the manpower to secure all the schools. Hundreds of children have already been killed in their dormitories. In a newly released video, Abubakar Shekau, the man who claims to lead Boko Haram, grins as he mocks the Bring Back Our Girls activists.
Bring back our girls. Oh, bring back our army.
He is referring to his repeated demand for the release of Boko Haram prisoners. In the video, Shekau also claims responsibility for last month's bombings in Lagos and the Nigerian capital of Abuja, and he threatens Muslim clerics that preach against extremism. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Abuja.
Violence and abuse against women and girls in developing countries has long been a common practice. In regions of conflict, mistreatment of them is used as a means of warfare. Women's rights advocate Michelle Riquet is founder and CEO of She Is Safe, an organization that rescues and rehabilitates women and girls who are victims of abuse. The group has been at the forefront of bringing awareness to gendercide, child marriage, and the abduction and slavery of girls. Riquet is also the author of Forgotten Girls, a recently released book that she says serves as a call to action to break the cycle of exploitation and violence against young women. She spoke with reporter Kim Lewis last week about the effects of abuse on young women and girls. Today, she tells Kim about the programs provided by her organization that help victims rise above their circumstances and become contributors to society.
What She Is Safe focuses on is a full spectrum of prevention, rescue, and restoration. The restoration side, generally this involves making sure that women or girls are in a safe location, whether it's a safe house or a village that's been negotiated with the leader so that they will receive women and girls there, or if we can work with their own communities, which is by far the very best way women and girls can stay where they've grown up, and there we introduce what we call transformation groups. So we gather the women together on a weekly basis, and they are facilitated through a process of learning literacy skills, learning about health and hygiene and abuse prevention and recourse steps, as well as working together to create a common loan fund so that the women are gaining financial literacy skills, and during that process, they are learning, each of them is learning to be a leader and understanding the power of working together.
And so how are the women and girls rescued from these abusive situations to get to the safe havens?
Well, that is the job that She Is Safe has dedicated ourselves to. So we look for the areas where women and girls are known to be abused, exploited, trafficked. And the information is available, so we set up a long-term focus in a given community or area. I'll give you a for instance. There is a district of Nepal where it is known that most girls after the age of 12 will be sold into the brothels of India. And most people who work in Nepal and they're addressing the abuse and exploitation of women and girls know about this infamous district. So we've set our sights on the district and we begin to create relationships in the communities there, working with the women as I've described. And then in this relationship with the women, we're facilitating this discussion about our girls at risk of certain things and what could be done about it. So we really help them become the problem solvers.
So then what is the key factor, would you say, in women in these situations becoming empowered? Is it that they're getting the information door-to-door in their communities, or they're uniting, or what is the key thing that is giving them this empowerment?
I think it has to start with a process so that the women begin to explore in their own minds and hearts what are the losses that we are all experiencing because of the way that women and girls are mistreated. Once we get that conversation going, it's amazing how the group is galvanized.
Also, just wanted to touch briefly on your measurement of success. How do you measure the success of your programs?
Well, set benchmarks every single year in each of our programs. What we're looking for, of course, are not only numbers of people in our program, say in that transformation group year-long program. In India alone, we have about 5,000 women right now. What we want to see in their lives is that they are making good decisions about helping each other. So that lending program is going well. So everyone in the group has their opportunity to lead and to understand how this all works, a girl who is kept in school is far less likely to ever be abused or sold or to sell or abuse her own daughters. So that's a game changer for us. We want to see these women using those funds to keep their daughters in school. And one of the first things we started tracking, we did not anticipate, women would say, well, my husband doesn't beat me as much anymore. That's a step in the right direction.
That was Michelle Riquette, founder and CEO of She Is Safe. She is also the author of the just-released book, Forgotten Girls. She spoke to VOA's Kim Lewis from Atlanta, Georgia. South African Nobel Prize-winning author Nadine Gordimer has died at age 90. Her family says she died peacefully at her home in Johannesburg. Gordimer won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1991 for her novels of life in South Africa under apartheid. You were listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Twenty-one past the hour. Here's a recap of our top story. The leader of Boko Haram has claimed responsibility for a recent bombing in Lagos, which, if confirmed, would be the militant group's first attack in Nigeria's commercial capital. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237. Today is Bastille Day in France. The Independence Holiday is also a time to showcase French military power with an annual parade down the Champs-Élysées in Paris. But this year's July 14th celebrations come amid heightened tensions over cuts in defense spending and questions about whether France has the capacity to fulfill missions in Africa and elsewhere. Lisa Bryant reports from Paris.
As in previous years, this year's Bastille Day began with the display of France's military muscle in the air and on the ground. Before the usual picnics, balls, and fireworks, fighter jets streaked across the Paris sky, crossing the city in the space of seconds. This year marks the centenary anniversary of World War I. Troops from dozens of countries who fought in the Great War marched in Monday's Bastille Day parade in Paris alongside French forces.
Gendarmerie qui a un rôle aussi très important sur les théâtres extérieurs hein, lors des OPEC.
France has always placed high priority on its defense capabilities, including its nuclear arsenal. And France's military expenditure still ranks among the highest in the world. But the economy is still struggling, and this year's Bastille Day also underscores fears of a weaker France. In per capita terms, French defense spending is at its lowest level since 1960. The government has announced it will cut 7,500 defense jobs between now and next year and more than 34,000 posts by 2019. The cuts come as the United States has been urging European nations to spend more on defense, not less. They also come amid France's involvement in two peacekeeping operations in Africa, one in Mali and the other in Central African Republic.
Serval a rempli sa mission. Il fallait que le Mali retrouve son intégrité.
On Sunday, French Defense Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian announced the end of Operation Serval, the French military offensive against extremists in northern Mali. French troops will be redeployed to combat extremists in the larger Sahel region, which may be an even bigger challenge. The reductions have sparked anger within the ranks and at the top of the military establishment. In an unprecedented move, the heads of France's Air Force, Army, and Navy reportedly threatened to resign in May if further cuts were made. Is France's military faced with mission impossible? Asked the latest edition of the weekly Journal du Dimanche newspaper. Former French Defense Minister Hervé Morin added to the scathing criticism just hours before the Bastille Day parade.
Aujourd'hui, le moral des troupes est au plus bas. Et fait historique.
In a radio interview Monday, Morin said the morale of France's military is at an all-time low. He predicted further spending cuts were likely, even as the world faced a myriad of threats and countries like Russia and China were beefing up their military. Polls show the majority of French don't want cuts in defense spending. The Bastille parade is over, but the questions and the grumbling over France's military and its future will likely continue for a long time to come. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon says the United Nations has a moral responsibility to help combat a cholera outbreak in Haiti. The outbreak has killed more than 8,000 people. More than 700,000 have been infected. Critics say UN troops introduced the cholera to Haiti. The country had been free of the disease for at least 150 years. The UN leader spoke publicly about Haiti's cholera epidemic as he flew to the nation's capital to visit families devastated by the disease. Ban said he has proposed a $2.2 billion 10-year project to eradicate cholera in the country. Cholera was discovered during Haiti's recovery from the 2010 earthquake and was traced to the banks of a river that runs through a camp then occupied by Nepalese troops. The cholera strain is the same as a strain found in Nepal. UN officials deny UN troops are responsible for the cholera in Haiti. Ban said no matter what, the legal implications, the UN and the international community have a moral responsibility to help Haiti stem the spread of cholera in Haiti. And the UN is allocating nearly $1.5 million for an emergency response to a measles outbreak in Somalia. It says thousands of children are at risk. The campaign aims to vaccinate 520,000 children under age 5 in parts of Banadir, Lower Juba, and Puntland. This is Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehei Yiswuhib in Washington. It's 27 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
Normudu. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Dante, AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this, whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. The leader of Boko Haram claims responsibility for a recent bombing in Lagos, which, if confirmed, would be the militant group's first attack in the Nigerian capital. Coming up, we have music from Zimbabwe, and in our feature segment, empowering women in the areas of economic, political development, and human rights. I'm Kim Lewis with Yehia Swuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. And of course, it's time now for the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. And happy Monday, Sunny.
Happy Monday to you, Kim.
Well, Sunny, I understand Germany's World Cup champion football team is being cheered.
Cheers all across Germany, Kim. Celebrations are taking place all across Germany following the country's fourth World Cup football title. Die Mannschaft, or the team in German, defeated Argentina 1-0 in extra time in the 20th World Cup final Sunday in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. The Germans got a sensational goal in the 113th minute from Mario Götze, a 22-year-old midfielder for Bayern Munich. André Schürrle set up Götze with a beautiful crossing pass. Götze chested the ball down to himself at the edge of the box and knocked in a left-footed sliding volley past Argentina's goalkeeper, Sergio Romero. Speaking after the match, Götze said, and I quote, "It's an unbelievable feeling. When you score that, you don't really know what's happening. At the end of the match, it was indescribable. Having a party with the team." In the German team party after the match, Götze hoisted the World Cup trophy, as did Miroslav Klose, the man he replaced in the 88th minute, and the World Cup's all-time leading scorer with 16 goals. Germany's three previous World Cup titles came in 1954, 1974, and 1990. Taking a look at the World Cup's top awards, Germany's Manuel Neuer received the Golden Glove as the top goalkeeper. Argentina's Lionel Messi won the Golden Ball as the top player. And Colombia's James Rodriguez, with 6 goals, won the Golden Boot as the World Cup's top scorer. Check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page at facebook.com/VOA Sunny. If you see the page today, Monday, you'll see a photo of Super Mario, Mario Götze, celebrating his great World Cup goal against Argentina. Let's sample some of the Facebook reaction to Germany's victory. Dumbia Jacoba, writing from Banjul, Gambia, says it was a superb goal by Götze. Clifford Savage, writing from Lumley, western area of Sierra Leone, says he's on cloud 9 after Germany's victory. Clifford also points out that with 4 World Cup titles, the Germans are now tied with Italy for second most overall, behind only Brazil's 5 World Cup championships. Clifford ends by writing, "Congrats, Die Mannschaft," and "Congrats, Miroslav Klose." Amadou Tijani Lawal, writing from Kano, Nigeria, says, "Congrats, German machine." Amadou also doesn't agree with Lionel Messi winning the Golden Ball Award as the World Cup's best player. He describes it as an absurd choice and says Colombia's James Rodriguez or Germany's Thomas Müller would have been better choices. Finally, Felix Negble, writing from Akatsi, Ghana, says the Germans deserve to win the trophy. And Felix's dateline reminds me, Ghana did not have a memorable World Cup, after making it to the quarterfinals 4 years ago in South Africa. The Black Stars of Ghana finished with only 1 point out of a possible 9 in the group stage, but that point did come against the newly crowned World Cup champion Germans. On June 21st in Fortaleza, Brazil, the Ghanaians battled the Germans to a 2-2 draw. Joining us now from Lagos with reaction to Nigeria's international suspension by FIFA is our Nightline Africa sportsman, Segun Dot on the spot at Adeyemi.
Good evening, Africa. World Soccer's governing body, FIFA, said the most immediate effect is that Nigeria will not be entitled to participate in the forthcoming FIFA Under 20 Women's World Cup, should the suspension not be lifted by July 15th. Meanwhile, in the wake of the suspension, South Africa has made a bid to replace Nigeria in the FIFA Under 20 Women's World Cup. South Africa's delegation to FIFA was led by President of the South African Football Association, Mr. Danny Jordan. According to local media reports in Nigeria, the delegation said its team had been on standby so as not to disrupt the program. Now, Nigerian football fans have been commenting on the FIFA suspension of the country's football federation. Here is what they are saying.
I think FIFA was wrong to suspend Nigeria on grounds of government interference. First, Mrs. Ebiako Baribote, who obtained a court injunction restraining NFA president and the NFF from functioning, is not a government official. She is the owner of Nembe City Football Club. This, I believe, qualifies her to be addressed as a football stakeholder. Is FIFA saying a football stakeholder has no right to seek redress in court if they think their rights have been infringed upon? In the restraining order, the court ordered the sports minister to ensure that its order was complied with. Given the circumstance, the minister advised the NFA board to convene an emergency meeting to discuss the matter. It was the meeting, attended by 31 members out of 44, that took the decision to remove NFA president. So you can see that FIFA was too hasty in announcing the ban on Nigeria. I think African nations should, through the African Union, lodge a strong protest with FIFA to reconsider the use of bans and suspension against African nations, given that football is 100% sponsored by governments in Africa.
You've been listening to Nigerian football fans commenting on the indefinite suspension of the Nigeria Football Federation by FIFA. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Segun Adeyemi in Lagos.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
Voice of America.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America, they're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
In basketball, one of the big stories in recent days was superstar LeBron James leaving the Miami Heat and returning home to the Cleveland Cavaliers. LeBron played 7 years for the Cavaliers before going to Miami and leading the Heat to 2 NBA championships and 4 consecutive trips to the NBA Finals. For reaction to LeBron going back to Cleveland, here's VOA's Tati Abeje.
It was a long-awaited decision. Rumors swirled around whether LeBron would renew his contract with Miami or, on the outside chance, move back to his hometown Cleveland and joined his old team, the Cavaliers. In the end, LeBron opted to rejoin the Cavaliers. He announced his decision in an essay to Sports Illustrated magazine. He said, and I quote, "I always believed I'd return to Cleveland and finish my career there. In Northeast Ohio, nothing is given. Everything is earned. I'm ready to accept the challenge. I'm coming home." LeBron attended Sunday's World Cup final match in Rio de Janeiro. There, he discussed his decision with reporters.
Yeah, I think it's an exciting time for myself. You know, it's a place that I'll, you know, be home, be able to represent for the family and my friends and those fans. And it gives me an opportunity to reunite one of my favorite teammates, Anderson Varejão, a Brazilian native. So, you know, it's going to be unbelievable, man, and I'm looking forward to the challenge.
Reaction to LeBron's decision was passionate, especially among fans in Cleveland.
We got our homeboy back. That's a wonderful thing. Thank you, LeBron. You have done a wonderful thing for Cleveland. All is forgiven. We love you. Thank you very much. Thank you, LeBron. Thank you, Cleveland. Thank you, Akron. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
I am so happy that LeBron's home. It's about time. 4 years in the making. This is great for the city. And I can't wait to see that mural replaced with LeBron coming back.
Welcome back, LeBron. We love you.
Everybody's happy. Everybody I've walked by has a smile on their face. It's one of the greatest moments in Cleveland.
It's one of those things where last night I thought maybe he'd wait till the weekend because he was going to go to the World Cup. And I thought maybe he'd announce it when he was in Brazil at the World Cup. So I wasn't actually even expecting an announcement today.
It's just an unreal experience, and I really, really can't believe it. I'm still in shock right now.
He's back. That's all that everyone is excited about. It's all, I mean, uphill for Cleveland from now on, so it's definitely good.
I'm from Akron, Ohio, and LeBron coming back home, I think, is pretty amazing. It makes me happy. It makes my heart beat.
Reaction from the fans in Miami was predictably different and one of disappointment.
Ouch. It really hurt me because it took a while to build a team like that. LeBron gave me a lot of happy moments. I'll never forget those days.
Devastated is the right word to describe it. I'm a huge Heat fan, been one for a long time, and when LeBron initially came to this city, I was ecstatic. It was almost like it was a movie, and yesterday it was like the ending of a bad movie, you know? But I don't know, to each his own. I was kind of sad, but now just move on with it.
In Cleveland, LeBron will be joining a team that has an established star in Kyrie Irving and role players like Andrew Wiggins, Deion Waiters, and Tristan Thompson. LeBron said he will bring the city of Cleveland a championship, something a Cleveland sports team hasn't won since 1964. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm VOA's Toddy Abeje.
Thanks, Toddy. With LeBron James now back with the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Miami Heat has signed South Sudan-born star Luol Deng to help try and fill LeBron's big shoes at small forward. Reports say Deng signed a 2-year deal with Miami worth $20 million. Deng will be entering his 11th NBA season. He's a 2-time NBA All-Star and spent most of his career with the Chicago Bulls. Last year, Deng appeared in 40 games for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Meanwhile, two other NBA stars have also signed new contracts. Carmelo Anthony re-signed with the New York Knicks, while Paul Pierce, a 10-time NBA All-Star, is joining my favorite team, the Washington Wizards. Pierce played last season for the Brooklyn Nets after 15 seasons with the Boston Celtics. Finally, in pro boxing, undefeated Floyd Mayweather stops here in Washington later Monday night to promote his September 13th rematch against Argentina's Marcos Maidana. Mayweather defeated Maidana by majority decision back in May in Las Vegas. I'm VOA Sonny Young, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports. Back to Yahya's Wuhib and Kim Lewis.
Thank you, Sonny. And listen to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Fridays, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the Sunny Side of Sports at 1730 hours UTC right here on the Voice of America.
In our feature segment, empowering women in the areas of economic, political development, and human rights. And next, we focus on the rise in illegal poaching of wildlife animals in South Sudan. But first, some music. Here is Cynthia Mare of Zimbabwe with Catch Me When I Fall.
Show you, you're the only boy that I want, the one that I
Cynthia Mare of Zimbabwe with Catch Me When I Fall.
Well, the group Vital Voices works to empower women in the areas of economic, political development, and human rights in various countries. Recently, they honored Victoria Kisombe of Tanzania. Dr. Kisombe founded Ciro Lease and Finance Limited, or Safina, a microfinance organization inspired by her cow named Ciro. She told VOA's Laurel Bowman about how she began her business.
My journey starts from a time when I faced some challenges in my life. But then I looked around, I saw that I had a cow, and that cow was actually a productive asset, because then I could feed the children with the milk and sell, and I was generating income. So that gave me the idea that other women too, if they could have an asset like Cero, my cow, or any other tangible asset, then they would be in business. We go around the problem of not having collateral to access finance.
Okay, and this was right after your husband passed away that you started using Cero. Exactly. You got the idea to start the business and have now helped 25,000 people launch their own businesses.
Yes, indeed. We have 25,000, and behind them there are other people who've been supported, because behind each woman there are four or five people who've been supported.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about the award. I guess everybody wants to know, did you win any money?
Thank you very much, Laura. No, I did not win money, but the award means a lot to me, to Selfina, and to the women that I support in Tanzania. It increases our visibility, it empowers us, and also it gives us the credibility, because for us to do this work in a meaningful way, we need partners who share our vision and mission. And what Vital Voices has done is to give us that platform.
Okay, this is just a little human interest question. You're a veterinarian by trade, and now you've become sort of a financier. Has that been a difficult switch?
No, actually, my veterinary background gives me the bigger picture to understand the issues that surround the women, because we work mainly in the rural areas, and many women are engaged in agriculture, and they keep a cow or two or dairy goats. So that background it enriches me to understand the perspective where the women are. But now that I have the financial discipline, it sort of gives me even a better advantage.
I understand. So where do you hope to take your business now? I mean, this has become a big business. Where are you going next?
Thank you. Well, we've been trying to grow this slowly. So the first thing is to strengthen our presence where we are, because even where we are there, we need to reach out many more women. But within a year or two, also open up branches in other parts of Tanzania, but we are also eyeing across the border, that is within the East African region.
So yeah. You're going to be intra-Africa.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. When you hear about microfinance, this problem of collateral really is a big one.
Yeah.
Tease that out a little bit for us. How have you gotten around that problem?
Thank you very much. Our model works like this, that because most of these women do not own something tangible themselves, and yet the financial institutions are structured in such a way that somebody must have a collateral. So we start small, because it's micro. We are leasing small equipment like freezers, where women can use the freezers for fish business or for food, safekeeping food or soft drinks or milk. Machines like oil pressing machines, like sunflower pressers. And with that, women are able to press very rich edible oil.
Great.
And they're in business, but they also support the society.
Perfect.
And the list goes on.
Okay.
Water pumps, generators.
That's Victoria Kisombe of the Tanzanian NGO called Ciro Lease and Finance Limited. She was speaking with VOA's Laurel Bowman.
Conservationists say the prolonged fighting in South Sudan has led to a rise in illegal poaching of wildlife animals as pro-government and anti-government forces search for food to feed their fighters. South Sudan has always had an abundance of elephants, giraffes, lions, buffaloes, and other wild animals, but their numbers have dwindled in recent months. Charlton Doki has the story from Juba.
Though poaching has always been a common practice in South Sudan, officials say they have seen an upsurge in the killing and trafficking of wildlife since the start of the conflict nearly 7 months ago. Lieutenant General Alfred Akuch Omoli is an advisor to South Sudan's Wildlife Conservation and Tourism Ministry.
Poaching is terrible because, you know, these rebels are poaching. See? The army also is poaching because, of course, they are in the forest. They are fighting there with the rebels. So the nearest thing that they can get hold of is wildlife meat. Poaching has become very intensive now, especially in the rebel areas.
Each of the warring sides has accused the other of killing the animals. Whereas elephants are being killed primarily for their tusks, migratory animals such as the white-eared cob, the Tiang and the Reedback, all of which move in large numbers, are being killed to provide bushmeat for the fighters. Wildlife Conservation and Tourism Ministry officials say, prior to Sudan's two-decade civil war, more than 100,000 elephants lived in South Sudan. By the time that war ended in 2005, only 5,000 elephants remained. Last year, the New York-based Wildlife Conservation Society, or WCS, which is helping conserve wildlife in South Sudan, fitted 34 elephants with GPS satellite collars to enable conservationists to monitor the migration patterns and routes of the elephants and to gauge the level of poaching to determine how vulnerable these animals are to poachers. The collars also provide researchers with valuable information about how seasonal variations affect elephants' habitat. Michael Lopidia, Wildlife Conservation Society's Deputy Director for South Sudan, says since the start of the conflict, his organization has confirmed that some of the collars are no longer visible on satellite.
We have been discovering that some of these collars have gone down. Some, we have evidence that the elephants have been killed. With that, like when the conflicts escalated, we know one collar is behind the front lines in Jongol Estate. That means the most probability has been killed.
Lopidia says South Sudan and Wildlife Conservation Society officials fear South Sudan is becoming a hub for wildlife trafficking. Earlier this year, wildlife officers seized a number of elephant tusks, a sign that some elephants have been killed. In one incident, officials arrested an Egyptian trader trying to transport several kilograms of ivory, making its way through Juba International Airport.
Between January and March, April, there was an increasing number of seizure of this elephant tusk by the wildlife forces. In Juba alone, in that period, they seized about 30 elephant tusks. In Lantonto, which is in Yei River country, they seized 12 elephant tusks from a dealer. So if you add 12 to 30, that's 42 in that short period of time. Then you can see that there is poaching.
Lopidia says during that period of time, a combined force of wildlife officers and SPLA soldiers seized over 40 kilograms of bush meat and 8 leopard skins in Juba during random security checks on vehicles. Aside from feeding fighters on both sides of the conflict, officials attribute the recent upsurge in poaching to insecurity, which has prevented wildlife officers from conducting routine patrols in national parks and wildlife reserves. Omoli attributes the upsurge in poaching to easy access to small arms.
The poaching is very serious in South Sudan here, simply because there are a lot of guns in uncontrolled hands.
For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Zainab Abdul-Rahman, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
There is no end to the benefits of investing in girls, particularly when it comes to education. The benefits of investing in education extend beyond improving the lives of the girls themselves. Studies show a girl with a basic education is 3 times less likely to contract HIV/AIDS. Every year of schooling can increase a girl's future earning potential by 10 to 20%. She will share 90% of her earnings with her family and her community. Her children will be more than twice as likely to survive past the age of 5, and they will be healthier and more likely to go to school than will the children of her less literate sisters. Nonetheless, some 62 million girls around the world are not in school, while millions more are fighting to stay there. Thus, to increase education opportunities for girls, the U.S. government, through the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, launched the Let Girls Learn initiative. In late June 2014, USAID announced a contribution of $231.6 million toward education programs in 5 countries under the Let Girls Learn effort. From this total, Nigeria, for example, will receive over $91 million to increase school enrollment and improve the reading levels of 500,000 of its youngest school children, half of them girls. In Afghanistan, 5,000 new community-based education classes will serve 174,000 girls living too far from government schools. Partnering with UNICEF, the U.S. will provide emergency education to girls and boys who fled their homes to avoid violence in South Sudan. Similarly, the United States will help provide education for 180,000 children of Syrian refugees living in Jordan. And in Guatemala, USAID is investing $24.9 million in the Lifelong Learning Project to improve access to quality education for rural students, again, half of them girls. When girls are denied an education, humanity suffers. Let Girls Learn is a movement to tell the world that an educated girl has the power to lift her family and her community out of poverty, said Dr. Rajiv Shah, administrator of USAID. It is time for all of us to stand up and support a quality education for girls and boys alike all over the world. For more information on the Let Girls Learn effort, go online to www.usaid.gov/letgirlslearn.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.